Welcome back to another episode of the Scrimmasters Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. Once again, my name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And we are back. We're still knee-deep into the, I should probably elbow-deep at this point, into quarantine time. And Ray, you said you finally got some painting done today.
Yeah, I got a squad of suppressors painted.
What would you ever need suppressors for?
Oh, just the Vanguard Primaris force I've got. So, hey, it's the best army I've had in a while. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, they still seem to be on top of the meta at this point. What little meta we're hearing about. Try to get a little scraps of information from folks that are still playing via TTS. So, but... yeah, interesting to see what's coming out. But speaking of, there is going to be some new releases coming our way as Games Workshop showed off the third and final preview. I guess this is the leftovers that was supposed to be at Adepticon. So lots of interesting things coming out. More stuff to make me angry. It's like, how much more stuff can they come out for these other games? It just blows my mind. But... anyway, I'll try to keep that rant to a minimum. But the first thing I do have to admit was I totally misunderstood the Age of Sigmar release. I guess when they hinted at it a few weeks ago, they were like, oh, Sons of Behemoth, they're coming out with giants. I'm like, they already have a giant model. And they already showed a giant model. Big deal. You're rehashing old stuff? Oh, no. They have a new giant model.
And it's even more giant.
Yeah, it's huge. Like, this is something I definitely need to see in person. A friend of mine best described it as Imperial Knights for Sigmar.
Yeah, I heard that too.
And which is pretty accurate. I mean, there's three different builds, and I don't know what they mean game-wise, and no one really would understand it, having not played Sigmar a whole lot. But they're about, I'd say, what, 50, 60% taller than the original giant?
About 40 to 50%, yeah, at least from what I'm seeing.
They're pretty huge. So, yeah. So definitely a very interesting... change in direction for that game. So see how well that turns out. I'm not sure if there could be some conversion bait available there too for 40k. New Blood Bowl team. This one's a head scratcher because this is one even in Blood Bowl terms. I was like, why would you ever play this team? And they even mentioned it several times during the preview. Yeah, this is Blood Bowl in extreme hard mode. So I just kind of shook my head. Just, we're purposely pulling out an army. We're going to put out new miniatures for a model that or army that is completely unbalanced in the wrong direction. Okay. Have fun with that, guys. So those of you guys who are really into Gretchen and Grots or whatever they're called, you have a Grot team and a Snotling pump wagon and all that other fun stuff is available once again for Blood Bowl. It just scratched my head on that one. There's another preview for Warcry. If you see the pictures, nope, it's not Drukhari. It's a new warband. I get it. It's a big seismic shift for you Warcry fans because it's not a Chaos army. It's clearly a throwback to the old Dark Elf motif. But lots of, I can't tell you how many Drukhari players have just said, oh, look, I got my new Archon.
So yeah. Yeah, they're pretty cool models.
So, yeah, they're not bad. And that's why I was like, okay, yeah, I definitely could use them. And apparently those three are part of a larger set. So I'm like, okay, curious to see what else is in the box. And maybe that could be some Drukhari conversion pieces. That could be pretty cool. And so that was nice to see. And but last but not least, the important stuff, the 40K stuff, which related to this podcast. Psychic Awakening's Pariah. We kind of were half right. So there is new Necrons coming out. There's some new stuff coming out for Imperium. So, Ray, take it away. What do we get for 40K this week?
We are getting two new models. I'll start off with the Inquisitor first. The Radical Inquisitor by the name of Kyria Draxus. I know she's a Radical because she's using an Eldar gun.
That's right. I love the irony that she's got a Shuriken Catapult with a Purity Seal on it.
Yeah. And also using a Xenos called Shang. So I see this model and I kind of can't help but think of Cody S. He had that.
Looks a lot like. Yeah. Yep. And if you remember the 5th edition Grey Knight Codex, there was a female Inquisitor. They never made a model for her, but she was the one that was like a pen pal with Traz and the Infinite from the Necrons. And she was also a Radical, where she had like three Xenos weapons that she used to hunt down other Xenos. I love the character. She was really cool in the rules. Alas, never made a model for her and was expunged during their period of no model, no rules. So this is kind of a nice introduction.
Yep. And bring her back. The next model is Illuminor Zeras is getting his new model. Not a new character, new model. It looks so much better. For any of you trying to think of who that is and haven't looked at the previews, he's the one who looked like he had the spider body. He's much larger.
Yes.
He is on a, for anybody who's curious about the scale, he is on a dreadnought size base. So you got to figure he's probably somewhere around the height of Abaddon when you include his back spikes.
Yeah, he's pretty huge. I thought he was maybe 40 millimeter. I was like, well, it looks a little bigger than that. But yeah, if he's on a dreadnought base, he's going to be significantly larger. The other one, as you described, was quite derpy on a 28 millimeter base. And also, the observers might notice on his one shoulder, he's got a piece of war gear, which was previewed in the rumor engine just a few weeks prior to the preview, which would be that little mini Nocturith Blackstone crown circle thingy on the side of his, and that gives him some new rules, which relates to the Pariah story that we talked about.
Yep, that rule is called the Empiric Overcharger. When a psychic test is taken for an enemy psyker within 9 inches of this model, that enemy psyker suffers a Perils of the Warp on any dice roll that includes a double, instead of only a double one or a double six. What does this mean? Well, if you get to roll three dice for any reason, and two of those are doubles, you're going to get a Perils whether you use both those dice or not.
That's true. Yeah, quick math, 1 in 6 chance of a Perils, so that's pretty nasty. And for an army that does not natively have a psychic defense or even participates in the psychic phase, this is pretty neat. So you're not relying on just your gloom prisms. With that larger base and a 9-inch area, he's going to do some work against psychers. That sneaks up a lot faster. And people are like, oh, it's only going to... No, it's every time you do a psychic test. So if you've got psychers that are casting 2 or 3 times per turn, yeah, it adds up pretty quick. So...
And a nice thing, too, is Zeras does not have the Dynasty rule. So anybody playing any Dynasty for Necrons can use him in their list. Granted, he does not get the bonus for the Dynasty.
That's true. But he has we don't know what other rules are going to change. But we'll take a look at his current rules just to give you an idea of what he brings to the table. He has a living metal, so that allows him to regenerate. He's a Master Technomancer like all Cryptics, so he's adding 1 to your reanimation protocols. And the interesting thing was this: the mechanical augmentation. At the end of your movement phase, you can choose a friendly Necron Warrior or Immortal Squad within 1 inch of the model. Roll a d3 to see which characteristics is benefited, so that you can see the +1 Strength, +1 Toughness, or +1 Ballistic Skill. A unit can only be augmented once per battle, which is a big change. I misread that. The old version was he can only do this once per game, and he did it during deployment. So by turn 3, you could hit all 3 troop choices you've already got in your army. If you got another one, so you can keep doing this turn after turn after turn. Inched enough, +1 ballistic skill. It's just like my will be done. That's pretty nasty. So not quite as good on Tesla guys because you don't get the +1, but... So you get the triggering the Tesla on a 5s, but it's still pretty neat. +1 strength, +1 toughness, that can add up quite a bit. And back in the day, he had an Eldritch Lance, 36-inch range assault 1 weapon. It was strength 8, AP -4, D6 damage. And then in close combat, he was kind of meh. 4 attacks at strength 4, AP -2, 1 damage. So, but given his larger size, and the other thing with weird, with when you look at that model, looks like he's sucking the soul or the psychic energy out of a primary psyker. So I don't know what that all has to do with things.
Yeah, I definitely think we're going to get more than just this one new rule for him. I think we're going to see quite a few changes.
So just want to go back to the Exquisitor for one quick second. For those, so a lot of people are like, well, she's got like an Eldar face. Now she's kind of, she's just a bald chick. She looks a lot like Tilda Swinton's character in... Doctor Strange, you know, the one who gives Doctor Strange all the powers. It kind of looks like that. You may remember her from the videos from the original Psychic Awakenings, The Phoenix Rising, where the Shadow Seer reaches out from a psychic vision and kind of grabs her by the ears and tells her what's going on. That's who she was talking to. And as mentioned, Craftworld's Shuriken Catapult. On her right shoulder, she's got what looks to be the skull of a clawed fiend from a Chikari book as a shoulder pad. And then she's got this like dragon, looks kind of like Lockheed from X-Men fame. As on her shoulder, like I said, similar pose as Cody has. So beyond that, I have no idea what her rules present at this point, so we'll just kind of roll with it.
I'm looking at this now, and I might be wrong, but it looks like that might be a power fist.
It might be. It looks awfully big. Oh, yeah, it does have that kind of hockey glove look to it. The dragon's drooped on top of it, so it's kind of hard to see. It's an interesting armor. It's not a particular... It's definitely kind of got a female flair to it, but it's not Sisters of Battle. It's not Primaris Marine. It's not. It's very different. It's very cool.
It's unique. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the big reveal for the two new models there. There were also a couple other models that were kind of flashed about. These were the event specific models that were supposed to be available at Adepticon. Obviously, were not available because there was no Adepticon. And some of them were interesting. One of them I was super excited about. One of us I kept looking at, like, I think it was on the screen like forever, and I was like, "What the heck is that?" So, and those are currently available now as a made to order. So, which I'm confused on. I thought they were closed. So, are they available for mail order? Are they? It's the only orders they're taking.
Yeah, what they're doing right now is the made to order ones are the only things that people can make any kind of purchases on right now. Everything else is left in the out of stock stage. They did the same thing with the lieutenant model. Is that you can purchase it, but you still got to wait like everybody else for anything else. It's just that's the only time that they'll let you even make the purchases.
Got it. So take a quick look at what those models are. Give me one sec. So yeah, there's a Primaris librarian of some kind. Looks like an Ultramarines.
That's just the regular Terminator.
The face looked okay.
That's just a regular Terminator librarian.
And then they have Then there's also a Sisters of Battle, which pretty much the girl from the cover of the Codex, you know, with her bolt her up in the air like that. They made a model out of her. I have to admit, it's a pretty cool pose. I thought that was pretty cool. So, and then one last thing was a slight oversight. I'm not sure if it's truly a 40K thing. They likewise mentioned, not sure if it would carry over. You can play it in 40K. But for Blackstone Fortress, they came out with this new
expansion
type of drone. So this is in the Ascension box, and basically it's the Guardian drone, which is like the boss level drone. And I'm having a tough time getting a sense of scale. They say that the previous drone is they're holding in their little hands there. It's an awesome model. I'm not sure. Other than Blackstone Fortress, what to use this thing with? But I don't know. It looks really cool, but I'm not sure what to really make of it. So, and then for you Horus Heresy fans, one of the big heroes of the Horus Heresy, Saul Tarvitz, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. They came out with a model, Tarvitz. Yep. So they came out with a model for him. So I was like, oh, neat. And last but not least, because I'm a big fan of these sort of things, is Storyforge released. Apparently, there's another story coming out called Hammer and Bolter. And they did the character sheets for the two characters, two Sisters of Battle. And they look really good. It has kind of a lot of people blamed it said it had an anime style. It's more fusion, which is a combination of Western and so it has the anime style coloring. But it doesn't have the big eyes and the facial structure. It has more of the American Marvel superheroes style eyes and all that stuff. But it's also, they should come out with these more often because I'm looking at this going, like, if I ever wanted to paint Sisters of Battle Army, there are so many color guides on this thing to figure out how to paint them. That would have been awesome. So,
yeah. They also said that this would be the second episode. This was
little, correct.
So now we know what kind of format the
anthology is. So I just can't wait for this thing to come out. Just really want to watch these shows. Still no word on format or where it will be shown. My guess is they're still negotiating. And I'm sure with this coronavirus pause that everybody on both sides of the negotiating table are at a pause. So there we go. So very interesting stuff. Interesting with what's coming out, what's not coming out. It was also interesting, a much smaller preview in terms of only two guys doing the whole show. So that I thought that was curious to try not to read much into it. And during the little video with Illuminor Zaris and the new Inquisitor, the other two from Demifuge were in the video as well. So I thought, so I'm curious to see, will they be in their roles, be in the new Psychic Awakenings Pariah book or not? So that I don't know, but there's a lot of hints still coming up. But there we go. That's what's coming out this week. So if you really want those characters, the made-to-order ones, jump on that now. I don't know. That Sisters of Battle one is pretty cool. Part of me says, grab that. It's just, I like the little flames on her base. That was really cool. Little extra effects.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those models that for some people, it's one of those models that for some people, it's like, you get it just to kind of paint it well and show it off. Not necessarily mm-hmm. start an army.
No. I'm thinking more of, Kill Team, maybe. You know, just throw it on there.
Yeah.
It's unique enough. That's probably with Kill Team, with only 5-6 models in your army, you want them to be as different as possible. So that might be a neat addition there. So that is it for Adepticon. Any other previews or craziness that you saw by any chance? Yeah, I did not either. So, all right, if anything else comes up, once again, we will put that up on our Facebook page. And those of you who are obviously we're in the audio format here with the podcast have not seen pictures yet of the two new models, they are also on our Facebook page. So go ahead and check those out as well. We're going to take a short break, and as promised, we're going to go in depth with another faction review. This week, we're going to talk about Gene Stealer Cults. Be back right after this.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner from drinks to dessert and use a unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom.
Okay, welcome back after the break. As mentioned, we are continuing with our breakdown of various factions. Thought we'd start this time with Gene Stealer Cults. So last week we talked about Death Guard. Couldn't be two armies more opposite than Gene Stealer Cult and Death Guard at this point.
Yeah, we've gone from fairly slow to fairly fast.
And from super resilient to pretty much dies to a stiff breeze. So really interesting army. The idea of the rebellion springing up has definitely brought some new life into this faction. Everybody still kind of complains, where's the limo? But I think they provided a lot of other new units when this codex was really fleshed out. And but interesting enough, I tried to do a little bit of research prior to the show, and we're almost on the 1-year anniversary from the last time Gene Stealer Cult made a major victory when Stephen Four, otherwise known as Juice, won Adepticon. So with Gene Stealer Cult, and pretty much the list that he took to that event is pretty much the tried and true. There's been a few variations here and there. At LVL, there was a Ridge Runner Spam, which we'll get into. And there's a few other modifications. I also heard recently that Frankie from Frontline Gaming and Team Zero Comp has switched back to Gene Stealer Cult. So I'm curious to see what's in his list these days. But the general scheme of how this army works is not changed in almost a year. So, Ray, what can you tell us about Gene Stealer Cult?
Well, They're definitely one of the more versatile when it comes to movement. They've got that cult ambush ability, which for anybody who hasn't gone up against them or doesn't remember, that's where anything that has the infantry or biker keyword can be set up in an ambush or underground. And when a unit's set up underground, they can be set up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from an enemy model. It's actually set up as, the ambush ones, which have the ambush marker. That's, you put that anywhere on a battlefield that is wholly within your deployment. That one you can actually do any model, including transports and vehicles. So it's definitely got the advantage of being able to hide your deployment. So even if you're putting everything down first, opponent is not necessarily going to know what's where.
And that is a huge advantage when you think about that for a second. So let's take the typical Space Marine army we talk about week after week. You've got your Centurion bomb, and you've got maybe a Grav Centurion bomb and a drop pod. You generally want to drop those down, key targets. One's anti-tank, and the first one being more of a charge threat. All you got is blips on the table, and they don't even have to write them down. Like blip one is specifically this. The player can choose that at the time of when they drop down. I think they have to put the model down within 3 inches of the blip marker. So they got a little bit of play in terms of where they need to go on the board. And they're not revealed until, I think, if the opponent has first turn, they're revealed after the movement phase. So you can totally rearrange how you want. So if all those nasty units are shoveled to one side, they can put them over to the other side. They can put screen units up in front and make it very difficult to really execute your plan. So turn one, a lot of your alpha strike is kind of not at, because you don't have your targets. You're kind of at a disadvantage. And if the Gene Steer cult player goes first, I believe they can wait till later on as well to turn those in. So it's a real big advantage when you think about it. It's army wide, so that I think that's a big thing, as opposed to say like the Eldar and the Necron ability to redeploy D3 units. So
the next thing that's pretty useful is the fact that there's a lot of, not only is there versatility within the Codex, but there's also the Blood Bowl, the Blood Brothers rule, I think.
Blood
it
Bowl.
Is.
They have throwers and catchers. Blood Brothers, yes.
Yeah. So you can utilize things from the Adeptus, or not the Astra Militarum Codex. And there's actually a few items that are in the Codex as well, things like the Sentinels, the Lehman Russ, the Chimera, that help with that versatility. And with the right player, this can be probably one of the most maneuverable factions.
And some of that versatility too is with it's the first thing right off the bat with Astra Militarum, that Brood Brothers is your regiment. So there's no, you can't take like Catajan or Cadian or something like that. But the and you can only take one. You have to have more Tyranid detachments than Brood Brothers. So in a game where right now at 2,000 points, this seems to be the tournament norm, your max 3 detachments. So the most you're going to ever have is one Brood Brothers detachment. That being said, the native Gene Stealer cult models, and we're excluding any Tyranid allies at this point, we're going to pure Gene Stealer cult, don't have a whole lot of anti-tank. So this gives you a lot of anti-tank ability and also gives you a lot of access to some more durable units, because a lot of, the affect all those tricks you talk about in deployment, half your army, both points wise and number wise, is going to be in deep strike. So to survive that alpha strike, you need something a little more durable than acolytes. So in comes in, you can serve, some of these Astra Militarum tanks really helps out a lot. Actually, now to think about it, you could also use as good amount of bait. Hey, go ahead and take out my big tank, and they all come riding up on it, and then you, on your turn, unveil your counterattack via the blips and the deep strike. That could be really effective.
Yeah. And then they also have something that not very many factions have, which is the ability to shoot something without having line of sight.
Always handy, especially in this meta.
Definitely. So with that in mind, what kinds of... Well, let's look, start with secondaries. We've got a secondaries. If you're running a list that's Gene Stealer cult, that are you going to focus on? I know to a point it's always going to, there are going to be things that depend on your opponent, but some of it is going to be based off of your own list. So what kinds of secondaries would you be looking?
I think the first thing I look at is I definitely think of this army as still another board control army. We definitely need to be flexible to your opponent, because there's definitely one of the reasons why we're not talking a lot about Gene Stealer Cult is the one army they have a difficult time with is Marines. With the Auspex scan, they definitely have ability to push your deep strikers back 12 inches. They have the ability to shoot you when you come out. So want to be a little bit careful with the killiness. Yes, you do have some real, you know, hammer units, but you only have like two or three of those, and they can't be everywhere at once. So it becomes a question of, okay, what am I going to do the rest of the game? So the army is very good at the maneuver secondaries. With all that deep striking, you've got recon as an option. You've got behind enemy lines as an option. Trying to think. You can try and bait your opponent into taking headhunters, because Gene Stealer Cult have tremendous amount of characters, not just in the HQ slots, but in the elite slots. But lo and behold, one of their abilities is they... all the infantry units pretty much have the ability to jump in front of bullets on a 4+, which people are like, ew, 4+, steel drones are 2+. I'm like, well, yeah, but you have to buy shield drones. You're already buying these units for free. Now, these your basic line troopers are jumping in the way. So it's going to be a lot harder to take out those characters. Meanwhile, Gene Stealer Cult do have several sniper options. I'm just blanking on the name, the motocross guys, the leaders, Jackal Alphas, I think they're called. They have a lot of abilities to snipe out characters as well. So taking Headhunter versus your opponent might be another option on the killing side of things. So those are all pretty neat abilities that you can work out there. So some of the secondaries is very similar to what we talked about last week with Death Guard. You definitely are a board control army. I probably would shy away from Butcher's Bill or Reapers simply because, unless you're going against a very squishy opponent. So, your hammer unit can only affect so many units. Although, I would not shy away from, if you're playing a heavy knight list, your rock saws can make mincemeat out of a knight, and you have enough other bodies to kind of force them into an area where they can't really maneuver. Yeah, kind of. So therefore, Titan Slayer or something, or they got rid of Titan Slayer. What's the new? I just blanked on it. It's all Big Game Hunter now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they still have Titan Slayer. Yeah. So that'd be a really good one there too. For any parking lot armies, high, you know, with it don't have fly, or even if they, you have to be a little more creative with blocking if they do have fly, but you can do a lot of damage that way.
Yeah, I'd pretty much agree with everything you said. This is definitely an army where you have to worry about giving away Reaper points, because if you don't have a whole lot of models, probably playing your list wrong for Gene, especially for Gene Stealer Cult.
Right. Yeah, your army is a lot of screens that hold your opponent at bay. So your hammer units, which I've been alluding to, come in. So the hammer units are pretty much, there's three varieties in the list. There's a fourth one's kind of emerged. We'll get into that, but the one everyone talks about the most is, first of all, is the Muscle Beach list. This was originally popularized by Nick Notavati's list. So this was, and got further augmented in one of the Vigilist books, and it's driving me nuts. Which one? I think it's the first one. And what this involves is a large unit of aberrants, and then there's an aberrant leader who goes in there. And these guys have this massive... the word I'm looking for, like close combat weapons. So you need to get them in close, but good news is you have delivery methods with all the cult ambush and everything else we talked about. There's also a nifty stratagem that allows you to get inside of outside of 3 inches instead of 9 inches, so you can really surprise somebody and just lay waste to what you need to get done. So those are pretty neat in terms of, and they're just deafening. I think they're like a 9 or 10 man squad, and just brutal. They're pretty much going to make mincemeat out of anything they touch. I think they're all like strength 8, strength 9, lots of bonus damages. I've run into them quite a few times, and they are just heavy power hammers and power picks. That's what it was. They're thunder hammers. So they're strength 5 model, the base. So that means you're strength 10. Wounding pretty much everything on twos. They are a little expensive, 32 points a model, and that's one of the things we keep talking about. They got a price hike in Chapter Approved. I think if you bring them back down to their original Codex value, they would make things a little bit fairer for Gene Stealer cults. And the power pick are strength users, so still strength 5, but it's an AP minus 2, damage D3, so another nasty weapon. And so there's a lot of additional buffs that you can take. All kinds of character stuff to even ratchet it up even further. So long story short, they do a lot of damage, and they're usually your heavy hitter. The shock one is pure stain gene stealers. These work just like they do in a regular Tyranid list, is that they can advance and charge ridiculously long distances. So they can put on a lot of wounds in a lot of in a quick hurry. And just catch people by surprise. I know I've been surprised by them. I'm like, oh, I think I'm far enough. No, take advantage of pre-measuring in the deployment zone, because these guys can just take a, you know, take a chunk out of your army. The other one that we see a lot of, Juice made a lot of this in his list, was the various light infantry that this army has. We equip them with hand flamers. So natively, these guys are only Blisk skill 4. And so that's kind of but when you give them hand flamers, now they don't have to worry about shooting. So now you can advance and charge with no penalties whatsoever. Advance and shoot, rather. And so they can put on easily D6 shots each. So all of a sudden, you're just pouring damage. That's a great way. They're not designed to take out the heavy units. You want to use these guys to take out the screens. So if I've got rows and rows of models in between my juicy stuff, and you want your aberrants to take out, you put up the hand flamer blob and 40 shots, you know, 40 D6 shots downfield. That should take out whatever's in between, and then the aberrants follow behind, take up the space that was previously blocked, and rip into them. They have a nifty little trick called, I think it's Perfect Ambush. I can't remember it exactly. There's a nifty stratagem that allows them, as soon as they're deployed, they can shoot, and then that does not prevent you from shooting again in the shooting phase. So you're shooting once in the end of movement phase, and then shooting again right after the psychic phase. So theoretically, you're getting 80 D6 shots of these hand flamers. Pretty nasty stuff. Other option you can do is go for heavy hitting. The heavy rock drill and the heavy rock cutter are nasty weapons as well, very much in the like of power fists. So it's another great way of making them nasty. There is no reason why you should be not taking a cult icon with these units. That gives you rerolling ones to hit. So since you're usually hitting on threes, then you throw in a Primus. No, not the crazy band from San Diego. But as another character, gives you a plus one to hit. So now you're hitting on twos, rerolling ones. It just becomes, should be a really easy glass cannon, becomes a glass howitzer. Just really does a nice job of smashing up your units. Other models that we've seen, a very popular model, just because it just looks really cool, is the Kellermorph. He's more of an assassin type model. Originally was designed for Kill Team. They came out with him, 8 months later for 40K. He's got a whole ton of, he's the, looks like alien version of the good and the bad, and the ugly cowboy. So he comes out and he can put out, he's got 3 auto stubbers, 2 shots each, hitting at Blitz skill 2 with a flat 2 damage 2. So he could take out small squads, but the biggest thing is that 12 shots per phase, and he can't really take it back. He's got a 5 up. Volant's pretty much it for save. He's really good at taking out some character models. You can mix them in with the previous hand flamers we talked about, but he's a nice little addition to the party. And then the latest one, we saw this at LVO, and it kind of got people got interested in it, and it kind of has faded since LVO, is the Ridge Runner spam. So Ridge Runners are the quad runners looking guys. They're 14 inch move. They have a scout move. That means they can move at the start of the game. They each armed with 2 heavy stubbers, but you can also add on a heavy mining laser or a missile launcher or a heavy mortar. So a lot of extra options for increasing, but it gives you a lot of heavy weapons, and they have a lot of options where they can ignore the penalties for moving and shooting with heavy weapons. So it gives you a very highly mobile platform that has a lot of heavy shooting, which is very unusual for this army. So that's another thing we're starting to see quite a bit. They received a huge points drop in chapter proof, which is why kind of snuck up on people until it showed up at LVO. So those are your main hammer units. And then pretty much everything else on the list is meant to hold down objectives or support. So the ton of characters, just unbelievable amount of characters. I couldn't believe how many characters there were. So yeah, one thing we don't see a lot of is their dedicated transports. They do look really cool. But you don't see a whole lot of them. You do still see a lot of the motorbikes. We just talked about the Ridge Runner, but the other motorbikes have these satchel charges, and there's a way they can shoot twice as well via stratagem, so they're also pretty nasty. A lot of movement and great for taking out opposing vehicles, which are also pretty nice. But everybody else kind of stands in the way, so... Trying to think. So those are sort of your main characters. Magus is your psyker. Primaris guy is your reroll wounds, which is important. The Akana ward is a must take at this point. It gives you feel no pain and reroll morale tests when you're squishy. Any little bit of that helps. And Abominant is the character version of an aberrant, which is pretty nasty. He's strength 6, toughness 5 with 5 wounds. 3 attacks, and so he comes around. He's central. We talked about the Jackal Alphys. He's your main sniper. And then so there's a couple other guys that just do.
That's it for the HQ. The Klamis. Rest of these are the elite character.
Yeah, Klamavis gives you a +1 to charge, leadership in advance, so he's kind of a buff guy. The Locust is sort of a bodyguard type character. It's helps keep your other characters alive. Sanctus was the hot stuff when the Codex first came out. He's an assassin type character. He's also another sniper. Always wounds on the 2+, except for vehicles and Titanic. And he's got a nifty sniper rifle. And I remember, right, he has some sort of strange attack versus psychers. I couldn't remember what that
is. Yeah, it has to do with the sniper rifle. When you deal damage to a psyker with that sniper rifle, it suffers a peril of the warp after the attack has been resolved.
Ah! That's brutal. Biophagus is a way to, similar to what Saris does, he offers random buffs to various models, and mostly aberrants in the model, in the army. So, yeah, lots of options with this army. Probably the hardest part, though, is getting through, getting your... You're definitely in the game of rock, paper, scissors. Your rocks are some of the heaviest rocks in the game. You just got to make sure you avoid the opponent's paper so you can start smashing their scissors, because you have you don't have a lot of rocks.
So I think when it comes to the scenarios, they actually have everything you need to excel at any of them. And because of their cult ambush, you don't really have to worry too much about which deployment you end up with either.
No, because they can pretty much make their own deployment zone. Really doesn't, with all the advantages to deep striking and stuff like that, they can extend out as much as they want to. They can put tokens down. There's a stratagem that allows to put some dummy tokens out, so they can bait you into traps there as well. So yeah, I don't really think there's a big difference in terms of deployment zone types. I'm sure there's probably something we're missing there that some GNT are called players, but I think that's going to be more terrain dependent than actual the map itself. So be wary of deployment lines. I think the bigger thing I would be worried about, not so much with line of sight blocking like it would with any other army, but also what can they charge through and what can't they charge through. So be mindful of who you're fighting. Especially now with the post Psychic Awakening, some of the newer Eldar builds, Craft World, especially with the return of Shining Spears, those are a real problem for Gene Stealer cults, because there's no real way to screen them out other than some really tight deployment and keeping your models together. They have so much movement, so much not being blocked by range and by charge distances. They've got enough shooting power to shoot through one of your screens. You're going to have a lot of trouble with them quite a bit, and also all that indirect fire. But even a simple Guardian blob can be a bit of a problem for you with Guide and Doom. But with Marines, I think it's just a matter of who can get their, you know, get their stuff up first. You know, Marines are real good at, I forgot what the new scanner is called, that prevents models being deployed within 12 inches and being able to shoot models that come in from deep strike. Playing that game back and forth becomes a big deal. But don't forget to, if you have the room in your army, Genestealer Cult, specifically Cult of the Four-Armed Emperor, has their own version of Vect where they can turn off a stratagem. So don't be afraid to use that if at the right time and the right place. And yes, you can Vect a Vect. So, I turn to other matchups. Mission-wise, yeah, a lot of mission-wise, you're going to do really well with holding objectives. You've got a fair enough killing power, just need to be selective. You hit it right on the head earlier, Ray. You might want to stay away from the heavy. You want to be very targeted with your secondaries. You know, I'm good at killing one or two units and make a plan to kill those type of units as opposed to Reaper and Butcher's Bill. It's not going to happen. And then this is, we're talking strictly Genestealer Cult model faction. If you want to play Forces of the Hive Mind, where you add a Tyranid detachment to your group, wide range of new options, especially with the new Exocrine and some of the new model, some of the new buffs they got from Psychic Awakenings. Tyranid Warriors are actually quite durable nowadays, so some of the advantages, so we'll get into that in a later episode, but yeah, combining the two now will make things very different than as opposed to going pure Genestealer Cult. Anything else that you want to cover? Anything else that I missed? Yeah, it's a big army. I hope you like painting a lot of models. My son is slowly getting into them as well, and he hasn't heard kill team, and he wants to expand them into 40k, and I'm just like, how many more of these do we have to paint? Oh my god. So so lots of big units, lots of lots of models on the table, but it is a truly unique army and definitely a really cool army to master. It's definitely I don't want to say it's hard mode in terms of like you don't have the tools to win, it's just not as straightforward as some other armies. So if you run into a player who's successful at it, definitely pick their brain, and because there's a lot of nuances in how this army works. And being flexible, for there is no general game plan. You kind of have to see what cards have been dealt to you by your opponent and go from there. So, all right. So that has been our coverage of Genestealer Cult for this week. Appreciate all the additional downloads. And again, any additional news that comes out from Games Workshop will be posted on our Facebook page. Also, next week we'll be previewing another faction. If there's any particular faction you like to see us talk about next, hit us up on our Facebook page and let us know which ones you're interested in. So in the meantime, my name is Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.